I'm Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. I've been a cop for 27 years. I like to say I got a backstage pass to life. Well, guess what? I got some tickets for you. So come on in, pull up a chair, turn up that volume, and let's go. Chasing Justice is on.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Chasing Justice. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro, and I'm here for another rousing afternoon here on America Out Loud. I had the privilege, my wife and I, Miss Kathleen and I, had the privilege of spending time with our president, Donald J. Trump. Well, actually, Kathleen and I and 18,000 other people. We went to the Harrisburg, Pennsylvania Trump rally. It was really a great experience. I'm trying to think of where do I even start with the experience to fill you in. Now, we've all probably seen the rallies on TV, and they're all pretty good. I mean, Trump's a pretty good entertainer. He's a spokesman. He presents himself in a way that everybody's having a good time. And that's exactly what it was like live and in person. We got there, I don't know, we stopped and had lunch first because, you know, he's supposed to go on at 7 p.m. and they tell you the doors open to the airport. So it was an airport rally. You know, they fly in Air Force One and you're right there at the airport. So 7 p.m. he's supposed to come on, but just you get there to the holding area, they call it, where, you know, the security check-in and all that. We got there at 2 p.m. in the afternoon, and it was exciting. It was thrilling. It felt like a patriotic event, which is, you know, we don't see a lot of that anymore, you know, unless we're watching the Trump rallies. But to be there in person, Kathleen had this idea a while ago, and she's like, hey, listen, I got tickets for us to go to see President Trump in Harrisburg. Do you want to go? I said, well, sure. I mean, Harrisburg's kind of far away. I said, but this is a pivotal election in our country. And how exciting to see the President of the United States, you know, 30-some days before this pivotal election, this change potentially in our country. Let's go. Let's do it. So we went out there to Harrisburg. You get there and your first stop is parking. So there's a parking area, you know, the long-term parking. Most airports have that. We parked in long-term parking and they had tons and tons of buses to bring us the 2 miles to the airport. So we got on the buses, and as soon as you get on the bus, you notice the people that are there representing every race, creed, and nationality and color you could imagine of people were on this bus. And everybody is wearing red, white, and blue, Trump hats, blue line of stuff, police supporters, and everybody was excited. Everybody was thrilled to be in the company of other patriots, kind of like being here on Chasing Justice. Now, I know that there's a lot of people, a lot of our friends on the left listen to Chasing Justice because I hear from them. They send me emails, they send me tweets or whatever. I know they're out there listening, and that's good. That's called a conversation. You know, we should be able to talk about our differences and try and work things out instead of fighting in the streets like we're seeing now. But this event, I'll walk you through it. So Kathleen and I first thing, you park the car and you're walking over to the buses and there's people selling Trump paraphernalia and Trump hats and police flags. And there's people from all over the country were there. You see the license plates from people drove in so that they could be a part of this rally. We get on the bus. And like I said, I was just so taken aback by the patriotism that you could just feel surging in everybody as you walked in that I couldn't help it. I looked around and said, boy, it's good to be around a bunch of patriots. And the whole bus started cheering. You know, it was exciting to do. So we drove from there. The buses take you 2 miles to what they call the holding area. So you're at the airport. Now you're at the holding area, which is right outside the runway. And they have the whole thing set up for the president's arrival, which is cool. So you go to the holding area, and we met some really, really nice people. I mean, some really nice people, because everyone there was enthusiastic about America, about, you know, saving our country, about going forward as one people, as a united people. And that's what was great, to see the, like I'm telling you, the backgrounds of everybody that was there was a mix of everyone who lives in our country. And it was thrilling to see young people, old people, all different races of people just laughing and getting along and talking about the Constitution. And there's conversations going on all over the place about Second Amendment rights and First Amendment rights. You know, you had to go through, have you ever been to a concert? You know, you walk up and down around the barricades as you're making your way towards the front. And as you'd go by, you would hear these conversations. You know, there was a whole group of Boy Scouts there. And here's these young men with their leaders, and they're talking about, you know, the value of the Constitution and how it saved, you know, it saved America, and it's such a great document. And then you go past some other people, and there was some very old people there. I mean, talking very elderly people, and we're saying, wow, we're going to be in line for 5 hours. You know, I hope they're going to be okay. And they're having a conversation about what they remember old America like, and how Donald Trump is a guy bringing back patriotism, and how exciting all of that feels. So everywhere you went, you saw these different people just enjoying themselves. So you go through the holding area, you wind through that. That takes about, I don't know, we were there till the gates actually to the inside opened at 3 p.m. So at 3 o'clock, they start filtering us through. Now you got to go to the checkpoints. You know, you got to go to you get screening. You can't bring bags. You can't bring chairs. Now, lots of people brought chairs and coolers and food and big bags with stuff. And you can't, of course, bring any of that in when you're in by the president, right? They have to do the security. Everybody left their stuff out in the lines. And I'll tell you, to flash forward, when we came out, everybody's stuff was still there. Nobody took anything. Nobody stole anything. Nobody burned anything. People were just picking up their chairs, picking up all their stuff, the coolers that they left behind, and going back to their cars. So it was a great crowd. There was no huge protest like we anticipated we would see a lot of protesters there, and there really weren't. There was, everybody's looking around through the crowd, and you're figuring, okay, are we going to see somebody who's going to be a protester and pop up later on? And you really didn't see that. It was really a lot of fun. So we went up, and you get screened. You know, they go through your bags, and they ask you all these questions. But the thing that struck us was they had military people there who were dressed not in military garb, but there was no doubt you could see that these were operators of the United States military, men and women. And the dead giveaway, of course, was they were physically gigantic. You know, I mean, you looked at these people and you were like, holy moly, look at the size of that guy, right? And the women, too, were physically gigantic and powerful. You could just see that. And the guys all had, you know, the beards. So you could tell they were operators that were probably over in the Middle East, you know, as we see all those pictures of those men and women. And these guys are standing there. They could not have been more polite. They could not have been more helpful. They kept a very watchful eye on everybody. You know, they got the earpiece in their ear, you know, and they're listening to security in the background. They could not have been nicer people. You sat there and you said, wow. These are our military men and women. They are awesome. They are absolutely awesome people. And, you know, they kept a straight face, but you could see, you know, everybody's thanking them for their service. And they were not even kind of acknowledging that, because I guess you're not supposed to think that they're military, because they weren't in military uniforms. They were in some kind of an event uniform for security. But they were excellent. Then there was groups of police officers. You'd see somebody go by and they would have the blue line flag on a shirt or something. You'd say, hey, cool shirt, man. I like that. And they say, hey, thanks, brother. And in the combination of people, when you're in law enforcement, you can always tell when somebody else is in law enforcement by the terminology they use, or just the way that, you know, you talk to each other. So I saw this one young woman going by and she had the blue line flag. And I said, hey, my sister, be careful out there, because obviously she's young enough to still be on the job. And she looks at me, she goes, hey, thanks, brother, I appreciate that. So you could just see that everybody there was connected. Really, really cool. So we go through the screening, we get done with that screening. Now they take you over to another area before you get into the actual event area. And they had TSA workers there to actually do the bag screening, which was pretty interesting that they brought in TSA workers, because obviously they screen a lot of bags. So they brought them in at these huge tents where everybody had to go through metal detectors. But they also had local police departments were there. They had Secret Service in uniform, you know. And it felt really cool to see all of that, those different groups of law enforcement come together. And you know they were there to keep us safe. Even though they're walking around, they're carrying machine guns, they're all dressed up, you know, the very scary riot gear. Oh my gosh, the cops can't wear riot gear. It's so scary. It made you feel so safe to see that riot gear. to see these men and women, you know, loaded up and ready to protect us. That's exactly the feeling you got. You know, you didn't sit to go, oh, there's a gun, it's so scary. No, you were like, man, I'm glad this guy got a gun. I'm glad that girl got a gun. Because if anything bad happens, you know they're going to jump up to protect you because that's what they do, you know? And you just had that feeling. So we got through that, and you get through the screening, and you go now into this hangar. I guess it was a hangar, and you had to go through the hangar. And there's all vendors out there. There's a food cart. There was somebody selling milkshakes and all this. And you go past that, and then you go out to the tarmac, which is all fenced off. And they have three giant bleachers. You've seen them. If you've seen the rallies, it's the exact same set that they use each time. But you had the three giant bleachers, you know, like in front of you. You could see a line of American flags with an opening in the middle. And you could tell in that opening, that's where Air Force One was going to slide up and the president was going to come through. And out into the audience a little bit was the podium. And there's the two, teleprompters. And you got such an exciting feeling that, hey, man, the president's going to be right here in a couple of minutes. This is going to be really, really cool. Well, we were standing. We didn't get up into the bleachers. That was already filled. There was an entire bleacher set of police officers, and they had their FOP shirts, Fraternal Order of Police, FOP, the biggest police organization in the country. There's also the PBA, Policemen's Benevolent Association, but the FOP is the biggest organization across the country. They had their own bleacher. There had to be 700-800 of them sitting up there with their FOP shirts on. Looked really cool. The flags were flying. It was kind of a humid day with like an overcast, but the weather, it was not supposed to rain. You know, we were not supposed to get any rain. It was just overcast and humid. And we're waiting, and we're standing there. And again, you meet more people, and you're having more conversations. And there was a big, what do they call it? Like the big Jumbotron was up there. And now we're standing there because there's no place to go. There's no place to sit. You have to stand. That was probably the hardest part. And some of these people with their young children, I mean, the kids didn't cry. They didn't scream. They didn't holler. But you had like 3-year-olds there, 8-year-olds, 9-year-olds. And they were just excited, waving American flags. And it was just really awesome. So we're standing there now at 5 o'clock. And we're having a nice conversation. We're standing there at 6 o'clock. And now it starts to get a little misty, right? And the rain starts coming down a little. But every once in a while, off to our right was the big setup for the media, right? So they had a raised platform, and you had all the different networks were all there. And somebody out of somewhere, which started chanting, you know, the CNN sucks, CNN sucks. And it actually was pretty funny because, like, the whole stadium starts cheering, you know, saying, and you're sitting there, and the guys from CNN come over, start waving at everybody, you know, waving to the crowd. They're all taking out their phones and taking pictures of everybody in the crowd that's, you know, yelling at them. So even though, you know, we're not happy with what the media has to say often, they seem to get their place. They know they're going to be a target of the president when he comes out, and the crowd kind of went along with that. So as we're standing there, now it's getting to be 6 o'clock, and, you know, people have been standing for a long time now, because you're literally standing in place. The crowd starts to surge in, and now where before you might have had 3 or 4 feet around you, maybe 2 feet, 2-3 feet around you where you could move your leg. Now people are starting to pack in, because we're anticipating 7 o'clock, we're going to see this big, beautiful Air Force One come flying in out of the clouds and land down with the President of the United States. I mean, the anticipation, you could feel it growing. You could feel it growing, and it was getting more excited. All of a sudden, you know, chants of USA, USA start breaking out. It was great. A congressman came out from Pennsylvania. I think his name was Steve Perry. He came out. He was really great. There was a woman came out, and she was the head of the Pennsylvania Republican presidential party or whatever. She was there to organize everything. She came out and gave a great speech. And of course, they run through all the topics. You know, Sleepy Joe is in the basement tonight, and here we are. We're going to be with the president, you know, and USA, USA. So really a lot of fun. Well, 7 o'clock comes now, and we're waiting. And now it starts to drizzle. Now, it's not supposed to rain, but it's drizzling anyway. And, you know, everybody's putting their jackets on, and everybody put their hats on again. We're waiting and waiting. 7:10, 7:15, the president's still not there. Now, let me back up a little bit. I forgot about this. I want to tell you. At 5 o'clock, the Jumbotron comes on, and there's the president in the Rose Garden with his new Supreme Court pick. All right? Amy Coney Barrett, right? So they come on, and we watch that, and everybody's cheering and screaming. It was very exciting. And then it goes off, and that's when one of the people came out and said, right now, the president's heading over to Air Force One, and he'll be here at 7 o'clock. And, you know, very, very cool. So let me take you back now. 7:15 p.m., and we're waiting, and we're waiting. And every time you see, like, all the cameras, the CNN cameras and NBC and Fox News, they all turn in one direction, everybody would look because you think, oh, they must know the plane's coming. And the plane didn't come yet. But we could see on the roofs all around us, there was, I guess they were law enforcement snipers and all these people set up. And, you know, they're, you know, the president's coming when you see them guys and girls. You know, it's getting real now. And everybody's looking around the cloud. Where is it going to be? And then about 7:20, out of the blue, and I mean that literally, it was drizzling, it was misty. You couldn't really see past the bleachers. You could see that was an area where the airplanes take off and land, but you couldn't see nothing. And then here comes this roar out of the sky, and like a flash of lightning, you just see Air Force One come past you on the runway as they're touching down right behind the bleachers. Very, very cool. But then the plane disappears into the mist, and everybody's looking, oh, you know, where's the plane? Well, it takes about 5 minutes for them to turn that big 747 around. But as it comes to you, right out of the mist, you see the big nose, the big blue nose of Air Force One. The plane taxis around and then pulls up to the spot behind the bleachers. And you see these big, bold letters, United States of America. And you know that is Air Force One. Like any movie you've ever seen about Air Force One, if you've ever seen it fly over, it's just such a thrilling thing. The color pattern that's on it is so cool. It looks like freedom. It's the only way I could say it. It looked like freedom. And it was so exciting. Now we know, okay, president's coming. 7:30, all of a sudden you hear a cheer and you see all the people in the bleachers looking behind them and they're waving. And out steps the President of the United States. And the place just went absolutely crazy, cheering, USA, USA, Trump, 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 Trump. I mean, it was a lot of fun, ladies and gentlemen. It was a lot of fun. The President comes out and he gets to the podium. And all of a sudden, you've watched these rallies. You've seen Donald Trump for 3.5 years. And all of a sudden, there he is right in front of you. And he is just as funny, just as likable, just as presidential as you could imagine that he would be, standing at that podium, waving to everybody, you know, doing the fist pump that he does, and really exciting, thrilling. And then, of course, the next hour and a half was a wild ride of the president recounting his triumphs and his challenges as we go forward. And we'll talk about that a little in the next segment when I come back, and we'll finish up on our visit there with the president in Harrisburg. But I'm telling you, if you get a chance to go to one of them rallies, you really want to go. It's a long time waiting in line, but man, what a thrill to see the president of the United States. And if he's somebody that you like, there's nothing better. And it felt like America.
As we say, let the silent voices be heard. Shadow banning, editing, censorship, blocking, and adherence to political correctness are seen as serious threats to our God-given right to free speech. Suppressing free speech, the very cornerstone of our society, is not in the best interest of our listeners, readers, and those who provide our content. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everybody, to Chasing Justice. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro, and as you know, I am thrilled to be here with you. So I just want to finish up on my story about our visit, Kathleen and I visiting with 18,000 other people with President Trump. Now, I don't know what they would say about the crowds, but I took videos, and I held the video camera up above my head, and I turned in a whole complete circle. There were people jammed in to every part of that area, and that's where they were saying about 18,000 people were there. I was trying to, count 900 people per bleacher, and you're trying to, spread that around with the people standing there. But they said it was 17,000 to 18,000 people. And from what we were told, there was another, I don't know, 7,000 or 8,000 who were out in the holding area that couldn't get in because they limited it to the size of the people that could fit inside the building. So there we are. The president gets up to the podium and he starts talking. And first of all, he thanks everybody for being there. And, you know, the cheers, though, that break out. You know, the news doesn't always show you all of this, but you start to see, you know, USA, USA. And he's like, hey, Pennsylvania, I'm glad to be here with you. You know, and of course, you know, everybody, most of the people there were from Pennsylvania and they were thrilled to have their president there. And then he goes through his litany of accomplishments. And he talks about them, and, you know, then every once in a while you'd hear somebody back, we love you, Trump, you know, and then the whole place, we love Trump, we love Trump, you know, the new chant that you're hearing at the rallies. And then he stands there and he goes, and you know what, and I love all of you, you know, such a connection, you know, it did feel like a concert. There's no doubt about it. I know probably that would offend some people that, oh, what is this, an entertainer supposed to be the president? No, we felt connected to our president. You know, we felt connected to our president. So that was the fun about it. And then, you know, when he points out the CNN people, he says, you know, and here I am. And he goes, I got nominated. This was a pretty funny story. He says, I got nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize. So I said to my wife, Melania, I said, darling, I'm going to be home at 6:30 tonight. We'll have some champagne, but I don't drink. And we'll watch the news. Something exciting is happening tonight. He goes, and I watch the news and they talk about the rain. And they talk about a highway project. And then they talk about a missing dog or something. And nothing. They don't talk anything about the President of the United States getting nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize. He goes, now, Obama got one, but he had no idea why he got it. You ask him, Mr. Obama, why'd you get that prize? I don't know. No idea. And he got it, you know, before he even took office. So that was pretty funny. And he goes, and then could you imagine the next day, I get another nomination. So I got two nominations. So I call Melania. I said, darling, I'll be home at 6:30. We'll have some dinner and we're going to watch the news. You know, these fake news out here. And then, of course, the CNN chants start. Really funny. And he goes, and we're watching the news. And there's another story about the rain. And then there's another story about a road project. And finally, 2 seconds, they mention that I got a nomination. He goes, so it was embarrassing to be there with my wife, and I thought this was going to be a big deal. President gets nominated for Nobel Peace Prizes, two of them. He goes, now, actually, I should get 7 or 8 of them, because, you know, I've done a lot of things. Well, now the crowd goes hysterical, because that's classic Donald Trump. You know, he says, I got 2 nominations. I should have got 7 or 8, and the ones I got 4 weren't even the most important things I did. I'm just bringing people together, right? So that was funny, you know, and you do feel really connected to him. But he goes off on the media that's there. And you can see the cameraman and everybody there are laughing with him. You know, so you get this, they finally get the shtick. They know they're going to be picked on while they're there and everybody starts the chanting. And at one point, he talks about Joe Biden. He says, you know, Joe Biden, he goes, I don't know. He's got 47 years experience. I got 47 months and I did more than him. You know, yay, we love you, Mr. President. So it was awesome. And then it got down to, it was raining. And he says, you know, it's really raining out here. It's really raining out here. But I don't mind being in the rain with my friends from Pennsylvania. And of course, big cheers. Well, at some point, a military aircraft flew past the runway, you know, behind him. And it was this thunderous sound. It had to be, you know, one of the fighter jets that I'm sure accompany Air Force One wherever he goes. And this thing blasted by the runway. And the president turns around and looks like he was startled. Everybody turned to look like he was startled. And he goes, wow, that's a pretty fast plane. That's a pretty fast plane there. He goes, what do you think? He goes, we got the best planes in the world, F-35s. He goes, matter of fact, we got weapons. You can't even imagine the weapons we got in America. We're the safest place in the world. We got unbelievable weapons. So that was really, that was awesome. And I'm going to tell you, if you ever get a chance to go to one of the rallies, you really want to take the time and do it. Like I said, it's a long time waiting around, but you meet wonderful people. You feel very patriotic while you're there. And it kind of transcended Donald Trump. It was not hero worship. Nobody was there worshiping Donald Trump. You know, that's what some of our friends on the left get it wrong. They don't understand why people are connected to him. It's because he's voicing the things that we voice. He believes in the First Amendment. He believes in the Second Amendment. He believes in all the amendments. He believes in everyone. Race, creed, or color doesn't make a difference. We're all Americans, right? And that's what people are connected to. He says things off the cuff that are sometimes they're inarticulate. Sometimes they could be considered, I don't know, rude or sarcastic. But he says the same things we're thinking in our heads. And he says it to the people that you wish he could say it to, right? So it was really awesome. The whole time we were waiting to see if there was going to be any protesters, and there really wasn't. Only one incident happened. Some guy jumped up. He was off to our right. So it'd be the president's left. And he started to like yell something, and then it stopped like almost immediately. Boop, you couldn't hear. And then President Trump's looking over, all the crowd's looking over. You couldn't really see it from where we were. And Trump's like, "Hey, who is that guy? That guy's pretty fast. See how fast he got on him?" He goes, "Who are you? Are you a police officer?" And you know, the guy was a police officer, and everybody cheered our cops, you know, and the whole FOP place was cheering. And he says, "That's the kind of guy I want to work for me." He didn't get two words out of his mouth. That cop was right on him. He goes, "You know what? That's what cops do all the time. They act quickly and they keep us all safe, right?" And then as they're dragging the guy out, you know, the security got the guy, they're dragging him out. He goes, "And now he has to go home to his mommy and daddy's basement. And boy, are they going to be mad at him." And, you know, big laugh, big laugh. And the crescendo, of course, as he's winding down, it's 9 o'clock. And it was really a lot of fun. You know, you didn't notice the rain. The rain had stopped by that point. And he goes into his wind up at the end, you know, "We're going to make America safe again. And together we're going to make America prosperous again." And that I recorded. I actually did record that. It was a lot of fun to hear, you know, because you're actually there with the president doing it. So I'm going to see if I can play it for you.
Safe again. We'll make America great again.
That's it. Really a lot of fun. So, you know, good luck, Mr. President. You have a debate coming up. You have the election coming up. Our whole country is heading for change, whether we like it or not. Change is coming. And this election is going to be one of the most important things. Whichever side you're on here, if you're a Joe Biden fan out there and you think, you know, this is your guy and you're going to go out and vote, well, the country's going to change if Joe Biden is in charge. There's no doubt about it. Maybe it'll be to your liking. I think it probably won't be. Not because Joe Biden is a bad... I don't know anything about Joe Biden. He doesn't look like... He does what the same the rest of the politicians do. But his policies, I don't think are going to help our country. Raising our taxes, adding regulation, you know, changing what people get to take home. I think it's going to crush jobs. I think it's going to... You know, destroy jobs. He's in Pennsylvania, and President Trump is talking about fracking. Well, this means a lot to these people. This is their jobs, their livelihoods, you know? But however you vote, you know, go out and vote. Make sure you vote. Which leads us to, let's talk about that voting for a minute, right? Are you confident that your vote is going to be registered? Are you doing a mail-in vote? Or are you taking it to your post office and dropping off your mail-in vote to make sure it gets there? You know, we did find, while we were there in Pennsylvania, there was a story that came up that a bunch of military votes were found tossed in a ditch. And, of course, all those votes were for Donald Trump. But they found, you know, somebody's tossing these votes. That's the problem with this system of this mail-in voting. Instead of going and pulling a lever, punching a chad or whatever you have to do, if you don't actually vote, if you're going to mail it in, there's so much potential for fraud. And all these news people, you watch them and they're on there like, "There's no evidence, no evidence whatsoever of fraud. There's no evidence, none whatsoever. We can't find any." And then every day you hear different stories about, you know, people being arrested for fraud. Here in New Jersey, they had to cancel an entire election that took place because there was so much voter fraud in Paterson, New Jersey. They have to set up another election day because there was so much fraud. But, you know, that doesn't count. That won't happen when it comes to, you know, 120 million paper ballots. They're just mailing them to people. You know, all these ballots, you could just fill them out and send them back in. And I know they tell you, well, if somebody, you know, votes twice, if they vote with a paper ballot and then they're going to go to prison. Well, maybe. But do you think, first of all, do you think they're going to be able to count 120 million votes properly? Do you think they're going to be able to decipher what somebody meant when they signed their piece of paper? Do you think they're going to be able to match that up? Do you think they're going to spend the time doing 120 million votes to go back and check the records to see if John Q. Public went in and pulled the lever and he also mailed one in? I don't think so. And I think if the fraud goes the right way to the right candidate, I think there'll be no recounting. No one will be charged. We will just hear that, oh, candidate B won the election by 22 million votes. Interesting, right? So do you have confidence in that system? I do not. We see some courts and judges are saying that people can actually, they can cast their vote and it has to be accepted, 4 or 5 days after the election. And it has to be, it's postmarked, that vote will count. So that means they're not going to count that vote until 4 or 5 days after the election is over. So how's that going to work out, right? This is going to be a strange, strange year. 2020 just gets worse. So if you don't have confidence in that, what is it we can do about it? What is it we as American citizens can do about this vote? Nothing. Because the powers that be are going to demand that they get to do these paper ballots. There's going to be whatever fraud there's going to be. And then we're all going to have to deal with what comes after that. And what comes after that? I don't know. I think we've talked about this a little bit. You know, I'm trying to look down the road. We see the riots are continuing. The violence is continuing. Even though, you know, facts came out about the Breonna situation. The real facts came out, and that didn't stop the rioting. You know, you would say if this young girl who was just killed in her home because the police busted into the wrong house, right? Because they didn't care. They just busted into the wrong house. She was in bed sleeping, and they shot her and killed her while she was in bed sleeping. All of these things, none of that's true. None of that is true. They had a search warrant for her house. She was mentioned in the affidavit. The police hit the right house. They said, oh, it was a no-knock warrant, no-knock warrant. Well, let me tell you about no-knock warrants, because I've heard a lot of information on the news, and they don't always understand the purpose of a no-knock. They said, they go in the middle of the night to take people by surprise. Well, guess what? That's exactly the reason you get a no-knock warrant, because what happened in this case? The police knocked. Turns out there was witnesses, neighbors, who said they heard the police knock and announce the police. And what did the guy inside the house do? He got a gun and started shooting at the police. Now, his story is he didn't know it was the police. He didn't hear them. He said the police never said it was the police. Well, we have independent witnesses who said the police did say police. Even though they had a no-knock warrant, they knocked anyway, which is a choice you make. When you go to serve a warrant, I've served hundreds of warrants. When you go to serve a warrant, you make a tactical decision. What is the best way to do this? Now, knocking and announcing is what you're supposed to do. Right? So if I'm going to your house because you committed some kind of economic crime and I need papers and documents and computers, I knock on the door. When you come to the door, I present you with the warrant. Hi, I'm the police. Here we have a search warrant for your home, and I'm searching to get these things. You give a person the copy of the warrant, and then in you go and you search. A no-knock warrant, the purpose of a no-knock warrant is when you consider that there could be danger to the law enforcement officers and to the people in the house. If you knock and announce, because what happens, just like in this case, the police knocked, the guy went and got a gun and shot at the police shot back, right? And Breonna got killed in the ensuing gunfire, all right? And she was awake, she was up, she was standing up, probably with her boyfriend, when they heard the knock, and they got out of bed, and that's when she got shot. She wasn't laying in bed sleeping. But the purpose of that no-knock is to give the police the element of surprise. And the reason you need the element of surprise is so that you can get in and secure the place and the people before anyone has a chance to get a weapon, before anyone has a chance to get any, destroy any evidence. You know, people dump drugs in the toilet, they try and get rid of it. But the whole idea is that you go in there so quick, it's called a dynamic entry. You hit the door without knocking, so nobody knows that you're coming, they can't prepare, and you can go in. Now, an average size house, 2-story home, believe it or not, with a dynamic police entry, the police can secure that home, can get room to room, and secure that place in about 20 seconds. Now you say to yourself, 20 seconds? I can't get to my second floor in 20 seconds. The purpose of a dynamic entry raid is that it's not the old-fashioned SWAT kind of raid where you go room to room, clearing it. A dynamic entry raid, usually used in narcotics or weapons type of search warrants, is you hit the door and the cops go running for the furthest part of the house. And then people peel off from the line of cops as they encounter obstacles. So if I'm first in line, my job is to go to that upstairs back room as fast as I can. So the door opens and in I go running. Now, somebody pops up from the kitchen, the cop behind me deals with that person, and the rest of the line keeps moving, and you peel off like that. And the purpose of that is to catch people when they're not expecting you. Now, is there an element of danger in that? Yes, of course there is. But it's been shown that a no-knock warrant can protect the cops' lives because people don't have time to get their weapon. And if they don't have time to get their weapon, in 99.9% of all of them, the police have no reason to shoot at anyone because no one got a weapon in their hand. They're secured in that 20 seconds. Everybody in the house is down, they're handcuffed, and they're secured. And now the police can conduct their search, whatever they have to search for, drugs or papers or whatever, whatever they're looking for. So this talk about a no-knock warrant, first of all, they did have a no-knock warrant. It was authorized by the court. You have to ask the judge specifically for a no-knock warrant. The police just don't get to decide themselves, we're not going to knock. You have to ask the judge and make a reason. Judge, here's why. We think we know the person has a criminal record for violence. The person has a criminal record for using weapons on other people. The person has a shooting in their past. Where the police are concerned, this person might shoot. So that's why you ask for a no-knock. Sometimes the judge says no. Sometimes I won't let you have a no-knock. In this case, the officers got a no-knock warrant, and they decided to knock. At the last minute, they made that tactical decision. We'll knock and announce, right? And they still got shot at by the guy in the house first. He fired first. The police responded in kind and said, "Oh, why did they shoot 30 something rounds?" Well, there is no rule in police work that, well, shoot one round and see how it went. Only one guy shoot him in the knee, try to knock the gun out of his hand. That's not how it goes. Somebody shoots at the police, there could be one, there could be 12 people with guns. Officers return fire, okay? It's a dangerous situation. So the lesson there is don't have a gun and don't shoot at the police when they come in your house. See, that's the part of all of this people forget. You know, if that guy heard the bang on his door and he says he thought somebody was robbing them, okay, you lock your bedroom door, you get into a position of safety, and you let them know, I have a gun in here, I'm calling the police. You don't just start shooting. Now, I'm not going to take away from anybody who's made a decision when their house is getting burglarized and somebody's coming in to hurt them or an invasion or something. You do what you got to do. But when you really should lock yourself in the room, secure yourself, and if the robbers start coming through your door, then at that point you might have to protect yourself. But that's not what happened here. This guy just started shooting. So did he know it was the police? I don't know. He says he didn't. But that's why he shot, and that's why the police returned fire. And unfortunately, Brianna was killed in that exchange. This is a dangerous business, this law enforcement. It's dangerous for all the officers, and it can be dangerous for you if you're involved in crime and the cops get there. So that's a little bit what I want to talk about. We saw the president, and even though there's still rioting going on out there, even though we have the facts about Brianna and what happened there, it doesn't seem to matter to a lot of people. So where are we going after this election? I don't know. We'll be back in a minute. We'll talk about it some more here on Chasing Justice.
What if a new treatment backed by 17,000 scientific articles was proven to extend our lifespan, protect against terrible diseases like cancer, heart disease, and dementia, make us more attractive and thinner, feel calmer and happier, and boost energy levels, memory, and performance? What would you pay for even the smallest dose of this treatment? Well, the good news is you don't have to pay anything, because these are just some of the benefits of a full night of quality sleep. If you're one of the millions of Americans who need better quality sleep, the time to change is now. Until now, most sleep aids haven't worked, but a new, easy-to-swallow sleep gel, invented by the leading nutrition company, Healthy Cell, is designed to support all four stages of human sleep to help you fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deep, and wake up refreshed. It's called REM Sleep. To get a free two-night supply of REM Sleep, visit healthycell.com/sleep. That's healthy, CELL.com/sleep.
Welcome back to Chasing Justice. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro, and we are in round three today of our little get-together. So, let's see. We see the New York Times has come out with a story that they've had an ability to look at Trump's taxes. They've seen them. Now, how did they get them? First of all, Those are private. So why is there not an investigation but from the Southern District of New York to figure out how the New York Times came into possession of President Trump's personal, private documents that are stored with the government? Where did they get possession of these things that they could look at his taxes? All right, that's just one aspect of the story. The other aspect of the story, if you look at it, go back to 2016. Go back to 2016, before the debates there with Hillary Clinton. Wasn't there a New York Times story that says they had seen Donald Trump's taxes and boy, he's not a good businessman. Boy, he loses money. Boy, he's not as rich as he says he is. Blah, 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 blah. All this nonsense. It's a repeat of that. They've now seen and they've gone through it meticulously, all his tax records. Okay, well, you know, we see that when papers, private papers, surface on a politician, you should not have had them. But once you have them, the press has a right to publish them, which is amazing, right? They get them illegal, but they're allowed to publish them, which I'm going to say, you know, if it was the other way around, if this was something very damaging that showed crime or criminal intent against somebody that I didn't care for, I would probably, you know, say, well, at least now we know the truth, right? So I guess that's the idea of the press printing what they get. But President Trump has come out and said, you know, it's all nonsense. It's all lies. You know, he didn't make any income. He gets a $400,000 salary. He's not supposed to be involved. But the one thing they said, there was no Russian money in there. You know, they're skipping over that part of the story. They're not saying, well, we found all kinds of Russian influence in his taxes. No, they found no Russian influence in his taxes. Instead, they're trying to belittle and say, oh, he's not a very good businessman. He lost money. He only paid $700 in tax. That's to get you mad at Trump. Trump's got billions of dollars and he only pays $750. Well, I have no idea. Trump has said that, you know, it's not true. It's a bunch of lies. And, you know, anybody that does their taxes, you know that if you have a business, and he was a business, he's a businessman, there's a lot of deductions. A lot of stuff comes in. He put his own money into the campaign. So he could have lost millions of dollars that he spent on the campaign, and he writes that off. I don't know what he's doing, but to me, it doesn't make a difference. The man has an empire. Joe Pangaro doesn't have an empire. I don't have hotels with my name and golf courses with my name all around the world, right? I don't have private jets. I don't have apartments in New York. I don't fly all over the world and conduct business deals. That seems pretty successful to me. So he says he makes $10 billion and he only makes $5 billion. I don't know. Maybe that's the commerce that comes and goes and it's $10 billion he only made. I don't know. It doesn't make a difference to me. All I know is the man seems pretty successful. And the most important of all of it, he's done what he said he was going to do as president. Now, like I said, at the rally, it was not about Trump worship as the person. People like him because he's funny and he's engaging. But they like what he has done. He said he was going to cut taxes. He did. He said he would cut regulation. He did. He said he would make better trade deals. He did. Right? These are all good things for America. So, you know, if Joe Biden did these things, I would probably support Joe Biden if he was going to go out and cut taxes, cut regulation, make new trade deals, make things good for America. You know, that's the kind of thing you want to support. And the person that does that is the one who usually gets the support. All right, so that's what it is. It's not personal, you know, hero worship of Donald Trump. He just happens to be an engaging, funny guy who's doing the right things. And that's really, that's why he resonates with so many people. You know, that's what I was saying back in segment two over there, is that he resonates with people because he says what's on his mind. You know, he's not this slick politician that we're used to, you know, when they say one thing and then do another, or they lie to you completely and don't do any of it, or they couldn't get to it now, we'll get to it next term. You know, how many times do we hear that as Republican people? Right? If we just had the House of Representatives, we could make a difference. And then we get the House of Representatives and they say, well, we can't do it now, but when we get the Senate, boy, then we can do it. And then we get the Senate, well, we can't do it now, but when we get the presidency, then we can do it. And then when they get the president in there, you know, they do some things, they don't really do a lot. You know, they have Congress battles, and oh, then they lose the Congress, and we couldn't get it done. How can we not get it done? This guy goes and gets things done. That's why people support him, right? Not because he has a sarcastic mouth or because he says something inarticulate to somebody once in a while. People overlook that because of the things that he's doing for the country. He's doing it for all the people of the country, even the people who don't like him and don't support him. he still cuts taxes for them too. You don't see them. You don't see these big Hollywood types sending a check in, do you? Hey, listen, I don't want your tax cut, Mr. Trump, and sending the money back in, right? You don't see corporations that are against him doing that. No, we don't want you to cut our taxes. We want you to, we're going to give this money back, right? We don't see that happening. Yeah, people don't give back the money. They keep the money. Just like, you know, a lot of our friends in Hollywood. You know, if Trump is elected, I'm going to leave the country. I think they said that a lot in 2016. I don't think anybody actually boarded a plane with their junk and left. But of course, we're hearing that again. You know, people are going to leave. Okay, go ahead and leave. You know, you think you're that important to everybody else? All we want is a country that's fair and free for everybody. You know, no matter what your political view is, you have an opportunity to espouse it. Right? Whatever it is you want to talk about, you can talk about. So what do we see out here in the world? What are some of the big things? Okay, well, how come the press, and I really have to say, you know, there's very limited press and media that are doing the right thing anymore at all. I mean, here on America Out Loud, at least you have voices trying to give you, you know, truthful information to the best of everyone's ability. But when we look and we see the news, how come there's nothing in there about Hunter Biden and his the money? We're just finding out all this money, right? We're finding out he got $3.5 million from a woman who's the ex-mayor of Moscow, connected to Vladimir Putin. Well, there's a real connection to the Russians, and there's absolute silence. Well, it's already been looked into. It's nothing. No, what do you mean? It's looked in. You got a report that Trump didn't make a lot of money, and he's jumping up and down on his taxes. He's not a good businessman like he said he was. He's not a good businessman. He didn't make as much money as he said he did. He wrote off his haircuts. But here you have potentially real corruption on the part of the Biden family with money coming from all these different sources. For what? You know, it was just like the Clinton Foundation. Why did she get millions and millions of dollars donated to her while she was running for president to the Clinton Foundation, but as soon as she lost, that money dried up? How come? Because we can all see the connection. We just all pretend we don't see the connection. You know, the media does anyway. So why are we not looking into this Hunter Biden thing? What if the Russians, you know, real Russian collusion, is helping? What if that $3.5 million was to help Joe Biden's campaign? Isn't that something we should look into? I mean, we just spent 3.5 years on a fake Russian expedition to look for Russians everywhere in our elections. Here you have actual real dollars that changed hands. And, we're not going to look at that. Nope, we're not going to look at that. Why? Because it doesn't bode well for Mr. Biden. It doesn't look good. So therefore, the media is not going to look at it. They're not going to do stories on it. They're not going to run front page articles about it. They're not going to do, where's all the anonymous sources that tell us where that money came from, right? Absolutely not. This is the proof that everyone needs to see that none of us can trust the media. Now, this particular time, they're working in favor of our friends on the left. Pretty clear. They've chosen sides, and they're all in for socialism and for the Democratic Party. That's pretty obvious. I don't know how you could deny that when you see the stories and the lack of stories about certain things. But that's okay. You know, that's what it is. I think the problem is that most people feel they have no place to get real truth anymore. So that's why nobody believes anything. Now, who in our world would benefit by never knowing if something is true or not? Well, isn't this the political class that we're all so worried about, that they don't listen to us, they don't care about? And I'm saying on both sides of the aisle, that they don't care about us. Wouldn't it be good if you could never tell if a story comes out if it's true or not? Because you don't know, there is no truth. There is no place that reports. It's skewed one way or another. And depending on who's doing the skewing, you're going to get the facts from their point of view, not the real facts. That is what is dangerous for all of us as Americans, no matter where you are on the issues, you know. So let's look at Judge Amy Coney Barrett. And they're going to go after her now, saying, and the line, you can already hear the line from our friends on the left, is that she wants to take away your health care. She wants you to die of diseases, just like Trump does, and have no health care for your children. They want you to starve to death and die because they don't want you to have health care. Is that really what the opposition to Obamacare is? Now, I know friends of mine who had to go on Obamacare. that their private plans were taken away, and all that was left was the offer of the one of the Obama plans. And in most markets, there's not 20 or 30 different plans to choose from. There's one provider at their price. And for my friends who had to do this, the price of their health care did not go down $2,500 per family on average for stellar, unbelievable health care like we were promised. Instead, it went up thousands of dollars. And the toughest part about it is that you have to buy this, well, you had to buy the health care that didn't really do what you needed to doctors you weren't familiar with, much more costly than before, and the deductible that was associated with these. You had to spend $8,000, $9,000, $10,000, $12,000 before you could even put in a claim. For most people, unless they have a catastrophic kind of an illness, you know, $10,000 or $12,000 is what they spend on going to doctors and getting their medicine, probably not even nowhere near that. Maybe it's $3,000 or $4,000 if they're having a healthy year. Their kids are all healthy, everybody's good. But to spend so much money on healthcare that takes away from your family's available income, and then to have a deductible of $8,000 or $9,000 or $10,000 before you can even put in a claim for anything, is ridiculous. That's not healthcare. That's just saying everyone's covered now. Everyone's covered, but doesn't mean they actually get the healthcare they need. They're still out of loop. So they're trying to pin the judge to, well, she's going to be the vote that's going to take away the health care. That's what they're, it's again, a scare tactic, because they're having a hard time, I think, going after her because she's a woman. They're going to go after her because she's a mom, because, you know, she kept all her children, and she adopted, right? And she adopted children. She has a special needs child. So it's going to be tough for them to go after her and be really miserable to her, but they're going to do it anyway. We are going to see, another hearing, another set of hearings, like we saw with Judge Kavanaugh, where it's going to look like the barroom scene in Star Wars. You're going to have, you know, all these different characters getting up there and making allegations of wrongdoing and hatred, and she's a religious zealot. I mean, who's that comedian at night? I don't want to use his name. I know exactly who he is. I don't want to say which one he is, but they're all interchangeable. He comes out and he says, you know, they picked a Catholic. Really, a Catholic of all things? You know, they speak in tongues. These people are crazy. Instead of saying, here you have a woman of faith, right? She has a faith, a faith that's grounded in 2,000 years of religious faith, you know, the Catholic faith. And now she's crazy because she's a believer in faith. Well, first of all, a lot of our friends on the left think you're crazy if you believe in God to begin with, because, you know, there really is no God. There's no great guy with a big white beard sitting up in the sky that's going to do anything for you. That's not real. That's a lot of people believe. And you know, they're entitled to that belief. This is America. You can believe anything you want. But you're going to go after this woman and give all kinds of aspersions to her because she's a woman of faith? As opposed to saying, hey, she's a woman who has real convictions. Aren't we saying that about Mrs. Ginsburg? Aren't we saying that one of the greatest things about her, even though we may disagree with her completely on her rulings, her judicial rulings, but at least she was someone who had opinions that she believed and she put them out there. And she was solid in her beliefs, right or wrong, right? Didn't we just all get done praising all of that? With Ginsburg dying, that was one thing about her. You know, she had her commitment to things. Well, Judge Barrett has commitments to things too. We can see her commitment, but to go and attack her on her religion is to attack each and every person in this country who has a religious belief. Because even though they're going to come after her for her Catholicism, you know, this whole belief in this God and, you know, doing the right thing and who's to say what's right, right? They're going to go after her and attack her in every possible way that they can. And that's going to be an ugly scene. Now, hopefully, our friends in the Republican Party are going to stand up and say the right things. Like the last time, Lindsey Graham, he established himself in the Kavanaugh hearing by standing up and saying how disgusting it was what they were doing, right? Go ahead, go after this woman. Why don't you go after her on on her policy, right? Not her personally. She seems like a pretty decent woman. She's a mom. She's a wife. She's had a professional career. She's very well educated. All the things everybody says, oh, that's the way to go. And here we could be looking up to her. Instead, they're going to look down their nose at her and they're going to attack her. Now, she said she's prepared for that. She said, hey, I'm ready for the challenge, and it's going to get ugly for a while. But hopefully they're going to limit it to, I think, 4 days of hearings. So there'll be four miserable days. Well, a couple of days before that, they'll start attacking her. And then 4 days after that, and then they'll have the vote, and then the vote will go one way or another. The problem, the concern that we should all have here, is, are we going to see any more turncoats? Are we going to see other people who, you know, who've said that, of course, they're going to vote for her, that at the now that I've heard her actually speak, I think that religious belief is really difficult to get over, and I don't think I can vote for someone like, could you ever think, imagine in America, you would find someone who's a devout religious person and you would say you can't vote for them because they believe in God so strongly? That, you know, you got to have a really lukewarm kind of belief. You know, like you have a Christmas and an Easter belief. You know, that's pretty cool. We go to church on those days because it seems like the right ritualistic thing to do. But to actually live your faith is something dangerous. It's something that we really can't abide. We have to be very careful with a person like that because they're dangerous. The reality of this candidacy, of this judge, is that she threatens some of the things that people on the left, they feel they fought for, they deserve. It's hallmark of their life, you know. And how do you argue with that? You know, I would feel the same way if they were coming after the Second Amendment, or if they were gonna, you know, attack other things that, you know, as a conservative person we believe in, right? I would feel the same way. So I understand their upsetness that, you know, they may at some point change the rulings on abortion, okay? Which would mean mostly it would just go back to the states, and then each state would decide if they want to allow abortion, as opposed to being a concocted right through the constitutional right, which it's not. And I think most scholars, judicial scholars, when they are not pretending that they're, you know, they're not putting their personal beliefs into things, we'll say that the case was wrong. It was decided wrong. The whole decision of making up a right somewhere because you believe that there should be abortion is not the correct way to come to a decision. You know, let it go back to the states and let each state decide. And then if abortion is so important to you that you want to live in a state where there's abortion, you go live there. Or you know what? Go travel to that state to get your abortion if that's what you think you need to do. But the people in each state should be able to decide how they want to live. You know, states' rights is what we got to start looking back to. You know, the whole idea of this gigantic federal government doing everything in our lives is what causes these problems to begin with. So, my friends, that's where we're going to end our visit for today. But, you know, we will be back each and every day. Don't forget, you can find us in the podcast. We're on all the podcast networks. So until we meet again, my friends, remember, be a part of the solution, not a part of the problem. God bless America.